Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to Spirit Travels Radio, Cold Case Files. I'm Karen Miles, and this is my co-host and good friend, Jolene Bratson. How are you doing, Jolene?
Hi. I'm doing good this evening. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We're having a little bit of tech issues. My song did not play. We'll figure that out, and it'll be okay next week.
Yeah.
We have a brand new huge show coming up, and I'm excited about doing it.
I am too.
And hopefully we'll be able to help. It's the Colonial Parkway Murders. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with this, and those that are not. It consisted of 8 people losing their lives along the Colonial Parkway. The murderer was never caught, and there are still 2 people that remain missing to this day. And my friend Jolene here, well, she was the one that brought this up to my, she brought it out to my attention about the show, or not actually about the show, but she brought it about the case, and we started discussing the case and thought that this might be something good that we could bring on air, talk about, and maybe get some of the people that were involved in that case to come on air and discuss it, and hopefully some of the family members as well. We want to try and help bring some type of closure to those families. It's a very sad case, and it's been more than 20 years.
Yes, that is right. I live in the vicinity in the area. The Colonial Parkway extends from Jamestown, the Jamestown settlement, Jamestown Island, all the way to the Yorktown beach, the Yorktown Coleman Bridge, where it kind of comes to an end. It's a very long drive, a very pretty drive, mostly all trees, a few parking areas. The closer you get to Jamestown, it opens up more into a beach area where people enjoy it very much. But from the beach back toward Yorktown is, I believe, the vicinity of the area to which the murders took place. They were more in the desolate area. That's what I would describe it as. The area that they were found was the area of the tree lines that the forest went way, 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 way back off the road. The parkway goes both ways. Let's see. I don't want to get this wrong. I believe it's north to south. If I'm wrong, I apologize. I don't think it's east to west. It's north to south and south to north. The traffic travels both ways, and for anybody that's listening that may live here in the area, you become all too familiar with it because a lot of people use it not only for for traveling and getting away from traffic and lights and things like that, and it's an easier, more pleasant drive. And then some people just use it at night during the summer to cool down and take a drive, and that's basically how that happened. These people probably took a summer's night's drive. I've done it myself, just taking a night drive, and in doing so, the area does not have lighting. It doesn't have street lights. It's all animals and deer, foxes, raccoons, possums. It's got everything except lights. I just say, you know, it's one of those areas where it's really pretty, and you can look over. The ravines are very deep. They go down into the York River. The York River extends all the way to West Point and Croker, all through that area. And you can actually see, if you are standing in Croker, you look all the way down the river, and you can actually see the opening where the Coleman Bridge is and everything on a very clear day. That's when you can see it. But at night, this is a very dark place, and this is where these murders took place, more on the Yorktown side than the Jamestown side. And to this day, they, in fact, just this past spring, I believe, they took dogs, canine units. The families united and walked the perimeter of a long stretch. I think it was a good 2-3-4 miles, and took a long stretch to hike. They had backpacks on them and everything, because there are, we do have snakes out there. We've got copperheads and things like that, so they were being cautious. And they were not welcomed when they went out there. The park rangers basically wanted them to leave. They were told not to walk but so far in, which was only a few feet. And the park rangers told them, because it's federal property, which it is, it's a national park, that they had to look out for people's lives, and they weren't really welcome to look for their loved ones that they had lost in these murders. And they were very upset. The families became very upset. And I would have ignored the park rangers, and I would have kept right on walking, because that's my nature. I would have told them where to go, I think. And at the same time, they didn't want to disrespect the rules of the national park, but they left on a basis where they were upset about it. They expressed their discontent, and nothing came of it. Not a thing. They were told to leave, and they left.
And it's sad that it's gone on for as long as it has, given the fact that, you know, the families do want closure to the case and this person or persons caught. I know that when we were discussing this case, now, to give everybody an insight on this, this happened between 1986 and 1989. And, of course, they believe that there was at least 8 people that died in this incident. And from our conversations, we started talking more about it. And to me, because of the time in between each attack, it leads me to believe that maybe this person traveled, and that there may be other cases that might be associated with these, and they're just not quite aware of it at this point.
Right. For a long time, Karen, I actually thought that this person actually resided right here in this area. It took a long time for me to basically maybe think, this person could be traveling in any shape, way, or form as far as travel, whether it be a bus or a truck or 18-wheeler, and please, all you 18-wheeler guys and ladies out there, don't take me the wrong way. I don't mean anything by it. I'm just saying that the form of transportation it can vary so very much, and it took a while for me to think, as Karen did, that this person could be traveling. And for a long time, I thought he probably, or she, or they, lived right around the corner, and you know, waited. And but they all, there was, I believe, and if I am wrong, I would want someone to correct me. There was one or two, but that was it, survivors, and they never spoke of it ever. The only thing they did say was that, and I believe it was a lady by herself, which I think threw that person off, because he or she always seemed to go for people that came in twos, whether, you know, it didn't matter how the company was kept, it was two people. And I believe one lady was able to drive off and get away, and she described it as something similar to a Virginia State Police car with a blue light, and he had on a dark shirt, dark pants, if I'm not mistaken, a weapon on his hip like an officer would carry. He asked to see driver's license and so on, and I believe that's when she made her escape. That's when she made her getaway, and he did not chase her, which obviously if you run from a state trooper, you're going to get caught, you know, in one form or another, which tells me that this person was not in law enforcement at all, none whatsoever. And he stopped a lady by herself, and she was already aware of the murders that had taken place, and she took off, and she never spoke of it again, not to this day. I'm sure it's something she wanted to forget or was told to forget, one or the other. And that particular scenario kind of stuck with me throughout my growing years here in this area, knowing that, you know, I remember dating a young man that we wanted to go out there and like other couples and enjoy the parkway, but hesitated. Karen, I'm talking about Michael, that he, when he would come over and visit with me, and my family, my father and so on, he was very hesitant on driving out there. In fact, I never forgot his words. No, I'm not taking that chance. And we didn't, you know, because we didn't want, as he put it, he didn't want to end up like the other people. And so, and of course, he didn't want anything to happen to me, so we stayed away, and we just found other things to do, you know. But this was a very dangerous place, and actually still today, even though the law enforcement has increased and been updated, and the technology, of course, is much more advanced, and they have computers and everything in their cars these days like they didn't have that back then. They didn't know what a computer was in a police car, and now today they can just type in a license plate and have it within seconds, and you know, and within saying that, I hate to say this, but I wish it would have happened in today's time, that way this person would have been caught.
Long time ago, yes. Now, yes. Some of the people, I'm going to name those that were involved in the case, and hopefully we will have people that will call us, let us talk with us about it, you know, especially the family members and maybe some of the investigators.
The first two
victims was Rebecca Andowski. She was 21, and Kathleen Marion Thomas, 27. Their bodies were discovered October 12, 1986, inside their car, and that their vehicle had been pushed down an embankment. They were both fully clothed, and there was no signs of any type of assault other than murders themselves. Now, it goes on for nearly a year before the next set of people, and it was September of 1987, and it was the bodies of David Nodling, age 20, and Robin Edwards, age 14, and they were discovered at the Ragged Island Wildlife Refuge. His vehicle had been discovered several days prior to finding them. Again, April 9th, 1988, Cassandra Lee Haley and Richard Keith Call. They were both reported missing after going out on a date. They found his 1982 red Toyota Celica. And then neither of them had been found, but they had been presumed to be dead. And then finally, October 19th, 1989, Anna Phelps, age 18, and Daniel Lauer, age 21, they were found in New Kent County by a hunter in the woods. Along the area of Interstate 64 between Williamsburg and Richmond. And they were found with a blanket covering their bodies. And they had been missing since the previous month. So I hope that there'll be people that will come forward and talk to us about this, because we really do want to get this out here. This is a case that's been going on way too long. Something needs to be done. And then that person or persons that's involved and these deaths need to be brought to justice. Now, we were talking before, for someone to attack two people, I personally don't think that it could have been one person. But with the way we were talking, there is a possibility that if, say, for instance, the driver had been detained, if this person was presenting themselves as a police officer, so to speak, could have detained the driver and then done what he was going to do in the process. And that would account for the possibility of one person doing this to all these people. Now, the families are still out looking for their relatives. They know where their relatives are, but the two in particular, they're still looking for them. They do want closure. If there's anyone with any information, I would suggest calling the Williamsburg Police Department and giving them information about it, if you know anything about this at all. And if you would like to speak to us, you can contact me at 865-279-1915 or email at greeneyedlady355@yahoo.com. And this goes out especially to anyone that knows anything about it and those that were involved in this case, because we do want to bring more insight to it. We want to bring it out to light and more people be aware of it. Because in the beginning of this show, when we were talking, I didn't know about this case until Jolene was telling me about it. And, of course, I was a young child during that time, so I wasn't aware of what was going on. You know, it was just whatever was in my little town, but that was it. There are lots of theories as to what happened, and there will probably be 100 more theories before, you know, this case is solved. I don't know. I mean, it's a heart-wrenching case.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And Karen is so right. The fact that this person has gone on after 20-some years, never been caught, and if that person is listening right now, yes, it was my sharing with Karen that this was something that had long been haunting the Colonial Parkway in a very sad way. There were many times where people said that they thought they saw, you know, images of something in the woods, whether it be a mist or a sad spirit, what have you, and that, you know, for some people, the sadness of the paranormal hits home very closely sometimes, and it's not always far away. It's right up close, and you can go out there and go in the designated areas to where they were. It's very desolate. Like I said, there are no lights. The only lights you have are on your car, and they didn't stand a chance. They really did not. The ravines are deep, extremely deep, and the parkway itself is open 24 hours a day. You can go out there at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, you know, just to see how beautiful the stars are, because they come out and they shimmer over the water. And if you've had a bad day or a death in the family, sometimes it's relaxing to go out there. And now that all this time has passed, a lot of people have not forgotten these people and not forgotten this happened, but basically moved on and realized that if the law enforcement, which consists of the state police, the National Park Service police, James City County, York County, Williamsburg, they never got enough clues, not enough information, not enough of anything to go on. And it left this case completely unsolved. And normally in this area, when something happens, there people are caught the same day. It's a town where they don't let things go, and but being the historic Colonial Williamsburg, the parkway, as I said, stays open, and you're allowed to drive it, you know, at any time that you want to go out there. Getting out of your car is not a wise idea, but be simply because the wildlife is out there. You don't know in the summer what snake you're going to step on or something like that, so you kind of stay in your car. But at the same time, it being open, you know, to be able to travel at any hour gives someone like this person who did this all the families and took away their loved ones, it gives them the freedom to roam. They can do what they have to do and take off over the Coleman Bridge and go through Gloucester and hit the road, you know, catch the interstate somewhere way up in Providence Forge and carry on and leave, or go back the other way and hit Interstate 64 East heading toward Virginia Beach and go to the Atlantic Avenue side of Virginia Beach and go out there. It leaves you to go in any direction you want to go, which is sad because then it leaves these people with their lives lost and unsolved. And when I brought it up to Karen, I happened to tell her, you know, this case has been unsolved since way back. I was still a young girl, you know, a teenager, you know, and it was scary to go out there then. And And I was sharing it with her how all these people lost their lives and how tragically they were lost. And we call that, don't we, Karen? We call that the cold case, the cold cases. And that was when the idea came about. Well, why don't we work on this? Why don't we work on the cold case and see what we can bring back to life? And we may not ever be able to bring them back, but we can certainly keep their spirit with hope in it. And that's something that help me out here.
I have a tendency
to say things like that to Karen. Right away, she took an interest in it and said, "Let's do it." And yeah, let's do it. Let's find out what we can and see where we how far we can take this. You never know what may come out of it. We may help these families find closure and put their loved ones to rest.
That is certainly what we're hoping to be doing anyway. It's going to be a long, drawn-out process. It already has. And there's been so much hurt with this case. I know that, and that's like with any case like this, there's a lot of people that lose their loved ones, and they never heal from it.
No.
It may get a little bit, it may get some better over time, but it's always there.
That's right.
But it never goes away. It's always there. All the questions as to why. Well, we're hoping that with this show that we're going to be able to help find out why. And we will be airing again next week, and we'll be doing a 2-hour episode on the Colonial Parkway murders. And this will be for the victims. 2 hours, we're going to focus on the victims themselves. And then the following week, we will do another 2-hour episode that will focus on the investigation. In the meantime, we do want those that are listening to this show that may be family members, may be friends to these, to the people that were lost, or even the investigators on the case, please give me a call and let's talk, because I think working together may very well help get this solved. There's always that little glimmer of hope. If there's always something, someone getting that word out there, this just needs to be done. There has to be something somewhere that's going to pinpoint who this person was that caused all this.
That is right.
And let's not let them get away. They've already gotten away with it too long. But
you
I do want to... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I was just saying you are so right.
We are going to have to end our show for today.
Okay.
And in the meantime, we will come back next week with, the 2-hour episode for the Colonial Parkway murders for the victims. And guys, stay tuned to next week, and we shall see you then. So you all have a good evening, and thank you for joining in on the show.
Thank you very much, and please do stay in touch with us. Thank you.
Yes.
Good night, Karen.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.
I'll talk to you real soon.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye, everyone. Please keep in touch with us.